Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, and this morning's conversation is with Marion Blakey, Administrator of the Federal Aviation Administration. Joining us in our conversation is Dave Abel.
Over the past 10 years, most businesses have gone global, but none more than commercial aviation. What's some of the impact now of the international nature of air transportation on operations of the FAA?
Well, you know, it is a global system, and it is very much in the interest of the American flying public that we encourage open skies, the ability of not only of our carriers to fly routes all over the globe, but also to code share with foreign carriers so that, in fact, you know, you don't have to have expensive service everywhere because you can link up with a lot of others. That drives the price of tickets down. But at the same time, we have to be sure that it is a not only a seamless system out there, but a very safe system. And parts of the world, as you know, safety challenges in aviation are much greater than they are in the United States. So we're trying to raise the bar on safety in a number of places. We're also very convinced that American technology, American safety is something we should be exporting. It's one of the great aspects of the fact that the United States has been a leader in aviation since the Wright brothers. And so in markets like China, for example, we're working very hard on both air traffic control systems and procedures, satellite-based systems. We have a satellite-based system now that we believe uses our GPS system that will extend all the way from India through, we hope, China. Certainly Japan has already committed to it, and around the globe into the United States. That's going to be a great boon for aviation. So we're working hard to expand those benefits, and frankly, that also benefits the United States economy in a variety of ways, our companies and our passengers. It's a big part of our goal these days.
Does the FAA have a single counterpart in Europe, or are there multiple organizations?
I'm glad to say that with the European Union's advent, that they have now developed an agency that's brand new called EASA, the European Aviation Safety Agency, that actually is going to be officially opening its doors in Cologne before the end of this year. So that's a good thing because that brings all those countries together for us to work with on a joint basis. We are also encouraging, frankly, safety on a regional basis in a number of parts of the world, because especially less developed countries with fewer resources, if they combine forces and we can provide them technical assistance across national boundaries, that will work well in Latin America, in Africa, and other parts of the globe. So that's another thing that we're doing, but we work very closely with our European counterparts.
Now, a bit earlier, you talked about some of the things that are coming in the future of commercial transportation. And, you know, just to pick out a couple of the fun ones, you were present as Spaceship One completed its second trip into space earlier this year. What was it like to witness that?
Wow, I'll tell you, that was the longest period of sustained goosebumps I've ever had in my life. No, it was fabulous standing out there in the Mojave in the early morning, freezing cold, watching that flight when Mike Melville took it up, you know, really into space, really expanded what has happened in terms of a privately developed, privately piloted aircraft that all of a sudden can go not only into space but come back and has the capability to carry passengers. I was there with Richard Branson, who has decided that Virgin Galactic is going to begin carrying passengers into space in the next couple of years. So you can imagine, from the FAA's standpoint, I see a lot of challenges coming together. I believe, of course, this is very exciting and the future of aviation and aerospace, and we need to enable it. But there are issues of risk to passengers, issues, of course, that we have to protect the safety of folks on the ground. So it's a challenge.
Do you have an organization today that's focused on space travel within FAA?
Absolutely. Our commercial space organization within our organization actually has ensured the safe launch of 167 commercial launches already. Now that we're getting into the reusable vehicle area, of course, that's got new challenges, but we're very proud of that track record.
You also mentioned a bit earlier a new type of travel called microjets. What is a microjet?
It's a small, high-performance aircraft. There aren't any out there on the market, but there are two companies, Eclipse and Atom, and there's several others coming along, which are using composite materials and very high-performance small jet engines to provide transportation for 4 to 6 people, typically, that can be right up there with commercial jets, glass cockpits, all of the kind of safety and navigation features that you really see, you know, in a Boeing 777. And what that's going to do is it's going to allow air taxis to flourish, service to a lot of smaller airports, while because a small number of people on a cost-efficient basis can go on a non-scheduled basis point to point. Over time, it is really going to infuse transportation in this country with a lot more flexibility and cost efficiency than you have right now when you're restricted just to the large commercial jets.
So if we put a couple of these together, we have microjets, space travel, increased demand for commercial aviation today, even just based on the use of regional jets versus the larger jets we're seeing before. How long can the FAA continue to operate as it is today, or are there plans for a new way of being able to do business in the future?
Well, Dave, I'm glad you asked that because it's one of the things that I've really spent a lot of time thinking about with some smart people. The system is not infinitely scalable. In fact, we're getting to the limits of it. When you think about the fact that we use active ground-to-air control, voice communications, you can appreciate as the traffic gets more and more dense, UAVs coming into the system, a lot of things, we're really going to have to change this. The next generation system, we are bringing out a plan, in fact, again, before the end of this year, that I think is going to address what a next generation aviation system, both in terms of air traffic control, much more emphasis on satellite-based, satellite-to-aircraft, aircraft-to-aircraft separation, much more on automation, much more in terms of controlling traffic as managing exceptions with automation, looking to ensure the safety routinely. And in point of fact, we also are going to have to see a much better use of our infrastructure in terms of airport infrastructure. Where do we need them for the years to come? You know, it's not all going to be where it is right now. And so, you know, the build it and they will come. We better build it and anticipate where it's going to be. And so we're working very hard on those kinds of things, as well as what will a really stepped up safety system be all about. The Europeans have already developed such a plan. So we're going to be moving out on this because, again, we believe that the leadership of the United States overall, both for our domestic health as well as internationally, depends on it.
What's the timing of a plan like that? What type of horizon would you look at as far as the time that it would cover?
It covers out to 2025. That sounds like a long way away, but remember that the aircraft that are rolling off the assembly line right now will be flying in 2025. It typically can take as long as 7 to 12 years to build a runway. So this kind of planning, it's not that far out there. And what I will also tell you is that this is a interagency process, which we rarely see in government. We are doing this with the Department of Defense, Homeland Security, Commerce, because, of course, they have the Weather Service, and weather's a big factor in aviation, along with the White House in terms of our science and policy shop over there. So we've got really a lot of folks who are working with the Department of Transportation and the FAA on this. And NASA is a big part, of course, of that partnership as well.
Are there participation of commercial entities as well, airlines or cargo carriers or other users of transportation as well?
Absolutely. Our stakeholders really have to be involved and say, yes, we see the system serving us in the future, and that's going to be a big part of it. And frankly, such a plan will be governing our federal investments. One of the things that I think is exciting in this is, as we all know, the tremendous advances that have occurred in the Department of Defense in terms of the use of satellite-based navigation, air control systems that can translate into the civil side and benefit all of us. So this kind of joint effort together for surveillance, navigation, communication, it's going to yield real dividends, and it will begin to govern our investments, not only looking at 2025, but in the near years, because you got to have a smooth transition.
Marian, in our first segment, you talked about your career beginning as a GS3 and now working up to the administrator and cutting across both the public and private sector. What advice would you give to someone interested in a career in public service?
Well, I would certainly say that I found it tremendously personally rewarding. The mission orientation of the opportunities that you often have in government service, the ability to get up in the morning and know that you genuinely make a difference in people's lives, that's a tremendous engine, I think, psychically for all of us in terms of, do you like to come to work? Do you care about what you do? Do you feel like you're making a difference? You know, I can tell you that my career in government has really given me the ability to answer that affirmatively every time, but never more so than at the FAA, because we obviously have a mission that touches everyone's lives. Anyone thinking about careers broadly, but certainly in terms of public service, I think it's also important to be open to opportunity. I would never have projected that my career would have taken the turns it has. I could not have anticipated some of the opportunities that one career in one agency would then lead to in another. And it's been very exciting to realize that sometime the way mentors, the way people see you that are above you in government may not be the way you see yourself. But in fact, that opens opportunities, that opens challenges that you rise to. And I have found government to be a wonderfully supportive environment from that standpoint of being able to move into arenas that, as I say, I wouldn't have anticipated, but it's been tremendously rewarding. I would also say this, that I would encourage anyone who is interested in public service to look at the FAA. I'd like to see them go to www.faa.gov because there they'll be able to see what we're doing. Look at our flight plan. See how we're doing on our performance. But they can also look at the careers we have at the FAA. I think they're terrific.
Thank you very much for joining us this morning, Marianne. I'm afraid we're out of time. That'll have to be our last question. And do you want to mention the website once again?
The website is www.faa.gov, and I'd love to have people go there. You can even get good information about how the system is doing on a given day. You can even access it from your wireless, from your PDA, to see how your airports out there are doing if you want to know if there are delays in the system. It's a great site.
This has been the Business of Government Hour, featuring a conversation with Marianne Blakey, Administrator of the Federal Aviation Administration. Be sure and visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a copy of the transcript of today's conversation. Once again, that's businessofgovernment.org. I'm Paul Lawrence. Thank you for listening.